Harper Audio presents Console Wars, Sega, Nintendo, and the Battle That Defined a Generation by Blake J. Harris. Read by Fred Berman. Prologue. In 1987, Tom Kalinske was at a crossroads. He had spent the better part of his career working at Mattel, where he enjoyed towering success transforming the Barbie line from a niche has-been series of dolls into a timeless billion-dollar property. Recognizing his potential, the company groomed him to become their next president. But shortly after taking the reins at only 38 years old, he found himself embroiled in a dangerous game of office politics. With no resolution in sight, Kalinske decided that rather than wage an internal war, he'd prefer to fight an external one. So he ceded control of Mattel to a rival executive and left the company to become president of a competitor, Universal Matchbox. Although Matchbox's toy cars had historically gone toe-to-toe with Mattel's Hot Wheels brand, when Kalinske took over, his new company was hemorrhaging money and had recently been placed into receivership. He knew this going in. It was part of what had enticed him. But taking on Goliath eagerly didn't do much to change the incline of the uphill battle ahead. To revive the wounded company from receivership and give Hot Wheels and, of course, Mattel a run for their money, Kalinske needed to reorganize Matchbox, and so do in a flash. He spent the next couple of years traveling the globe and implementing ambitious restructuring plans, much of which hinged on moving all production to labor-cheap regions in Asia. By 1990, his strategies appeared to be working, and Matchbox had become relevant again. They were still miles away from bridging the gap with Mattel, but with revenue now over $350 million, the company had managed to turn a profit for the first time in years. Matchbox cars were starting to sell all around the world, except, for some reason, in Spain. So, Kalinske went there to find out why not. After arriving in Barcelona, Kalinske hopped in a cab to meet with the distributor in charge of selling Matchbox cars in the Spanish territories. Instead of embarrassing himself by trying to pronounce the address where he was headed, he simply passed the distributor's business card to the cab driver. The driver glanced at the card, noticed the Matchbox logo, and nodded. Kalinske was baffled. His distributor worked out of a tiny office. How could this driver possibly know where to go based on only the logo? Once again, Kalinske tried to present the business card to the driver, only to be waved off. "Matchbox, see," the driver said firmly. Kalinske was confused. But ultimately, he decided he wasn't a Spanish cab driver, and it wasn't his job to know such things. He leaned back, took in the panoramic view of a sprawling Barcelona, and tried to remember if you're supposed to tip cab drivers in Spain or not. Shortly thereafter, the driver stopped in front of a large yellow building. Kalinske stepped out of the cab and compared the address to the one on the business card. It didn't match. In broken Spanish, Kalinske tried to argue with the driver, but the guy remained insistent that this was the right place. Kalinske finally gave in and told the driver to wait outside as he entered the building. But as soon as he stepped inside, he was greeted by a surprise. Thousands of surprises, actually. The building turned out to be an industrial factory, churning out tiny die-cast Matchbox cars by the minute. Huh? Kalinske had moved all production to Asia. So why were shiny little cars shooting off a rusty conveyor belt in Spain? Was this why profits had been lagging? Who'd authorized this? Returning to his broken Spanish, Kalinske asked the first worker he saw if he could use a phone. He whipped out the calling card he'd been using to stay in touch with his wife and rang up his business partner, David Ye, in Hong Kong. "What's up, Tom?"
"Sample complete. Ready to continue?"